She had a complete meltdown and called him blaming me for almost everything under the sun. She accused me of initially excluding her family from our wedding planning, the wedding day itself. There's a lot more to that, but that's the summary. So my fiance and I sat down with both of his parents, and he explained that none of that was my doing, and that if anyone felt excluded, it was because of decisions he had made. That conversation lasted for 4 hours. Oh my gosh. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Here Comes the Drama. I'm your host, Krista Innes, and today we're joined by the amazing Joe Diamond, also known as the Midwest Mystic. He's one of the most jaw-dropping mind readers in the country. Joe has spent years stepping into high emotion rooms like weddings, live events, and packed theaters where chaos, expectations, and human behavior collide, and somehow reading exactly what happens next. He's been called America's greatest mind reader, has appeared on shows like The Today Show, Netflix, and Penn & Teller, and he even holds the world record for solving the largest corn maze completely blindfolded. Joe currently performs sold-out weekly shows at the historic Maxwell Mansion in Lake Geneva, and trust me, he has stories for days from what he has witnessed at different events in his life and career. And today, he's not just talking about it. Joe actually does 2 mind reading tricks live on the episode that will absolutely blow your mind. I know I was pretty shocked myself, so you'll definitely have to hang around for that. We are diving into wild moments, human behavior under pressure, and reacting to wedding drama that you will not believe. So get ready and enjoy this episode full of many surprises. Hi, Joe. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Krista. Really appreciate it.
I'm really excited because, as we were just saying before recording, this is just a whole new angle that I'm really excited to explore on the podcast. So before we get into it, can you just tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes. My name is Joe Diamond. I'm in my late 30s. I like long walks on the beach. That's a different podcast. Sorry. I perform a weekly show at the Maxwell Mansion in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin called Psychic Parlor. It's an evening of mind reading interaction. It's in the ballroom, so it seats only 40 people. And it's kind of a throwback to the turn of the century parlor entertainment where people would gather in homes and they would hear everything from lectures from anthropologists to demonstrations of spiritualists to magicians, conjuring, and telepathy. And my show is sort of a throwback to the more telepathy side. I've been named, and the .com was available at the Midwest Mystic. So if anyone wants to look it up. So basically what that means is instead of pulling rabbits out of hats, I'm pulling thoughts out of people's minds. during the show, I'll have people think of names of friends and drinks they would order at the bar, stuff I couldn't know beforehand on social media. And we're coming up on 2 years of weekly shows with purely word of mouth, no advertising. I don't have big billboards coming into town. It's kind of this underground thing. Again, we can only fit 40 people in there max, but every show's been sold out every week for at least the last year of shows. I'm sure there's 2 or 3 where we had a few people who didn't show up or something like that. I could look at the actual numbers. It's been a really fun project. I've been doing shows in the Midwest and beyond my whole life. I do, of course, house parties, corporate events, a handful of weddings. Yeah, so as a professional entertainer, I've encountered a lot of interesting do's and don'ts. I think when last I did the count, I was up to just shy of 950 corporate events the last 20 years. And with house parties and stuff, that's easily close to double that.
You've seen it all?
Not at all. There are some people who've seen more than me, for sure, both because they charge more and less than me. But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. So how did you get into mind reading? And did it kind of start, I know you've kind of made different turns, I'm sure, in your career. But how did you kind of end up to what you're doing now? What was kind of journey like?
When I was a kid, my great-grandmother taught me how to read playing cards, just like tarot cards. And my grandfather taught me my first card trick. So right at the beginning, there was this interesting dynamic. And I would go to the library and get books on everything from magic, both magic tricks and ritualistic magic, even though my parents were very religious and were like, put those back. So I learned to read them at the library and take notes in my notebook and then, go home later. But I also read books on UFOs, crop circles, paranormal phenomena, all that stuff. And so when I was in my mid-teens, there was a casting call for Six Flags Great America. for anyone not listening or listening who's not in the Midwest, that's a theme park just off of the highway between Chicago and Milwaukee. And they were looking for street performers. And I went in doing a little bit of mind reading, some card tricks, and I got the gig. But by the end of that summer, I was just reading palms and doing mind reading because that's what people were really responding to.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, after 2 summers of that, you know, 7 hours a day out on the streets, entertaining people while they're waiting for their friends to get off of rides or that kind of stuff. As Malcolm Gladwell says, I got my 10,000 hours in. And I started working, you know, house parties, corporate events. I noticed the mind reading stuff was getting more of a reaction. I also did some sideshow stunts at the time, which I don't do as much anymore. But like I learned how to stick my hand in an animal trap and hammer a nail into my nose. That was taught to me by a sword swallower. And what was fun about those is, you know, you could tell people exactly how they worked. Because like with traditional magic, you don't tell them anything. With mind reading, people can kind of piece together later on, maybe some like intuitive leaps or body language, that kind of thing. But you can't explain what you're doing as you're doing it. But with the sideshow stuff, I could explain exactly what was going on. And people would still go, is that a real animal trap? Is that that kind of stuff? So I was always playing with what was real and what was not. And I started doing ticketed shows in various historical venues, everywhere from the Maxwell Mansion in Lake Geneva, but I've also done shows at the Woodstock Opera House. I was born in Woodstock, Illinois. If anyone's seen the movie Groundhog Day, that's the building Bill Murray jumped out of. And what's funny is like, I'm kind of more known for these more intimate shows, but I've done shows for 1,000 people at a corporate event, 2,000 people at a high school. And even when I did like the Opera House, it only seats about 411 people, but which is small compared to like amphitheaters and other massive theaters in the Midwest. But people were still like, oh, how are you going to make that? Your shows are so intimate. How are you going to work with people? How are you going to read minds in the balcony? And this was right after COVID. So I was like, I've been reading minds over Zoom. So they're just right up there. Even in that bigger environment, that space, I've worked really hard on making the bigger events feel more interactive and intimate. And making the more intimate events feel bigger and more immersive than they may or may not appear to be.
Wow, that's awesome. I know, I feel like, because I've been to like different kinds of shows, I love the more intimate ones. I feel like you can see them closer. You can see like real reactions. Sometimes the like really big shows, maybe it's like the skeptic part of me, but even though I tend to be more spiritual, but sometimes I'm like, was this planned ahead of time? But the more intimate ones, you're like, yeah. No, there's no way. This is
also
like...
Also, because in the more intimate ones, there's more of a chance for you to be involved as well.
Yes.
In fact, at the Maxwell, we have introvert seating, because people's number one fear is public
speaking. Getting called.
Well, it's public speaking, whether or not they're called up for a show or need to speak for work. And on top of that, I'm going to, you know, tell them what they're thinking. Even if this was all a joke, even if I was just like, oh, you're thinking of this really embarrassing thing that happened. Is that right? No. Well, of course you'd say no. It's embarrassing. You know, now if that person's there with their coworkers, now they're that person. And I do not do that, of course. I'm always very conscious of making sure everyone in my audience goes back a hero. That said, I completely understand that some people just do not want to participate, and I want everyone to feel comfortable in the show. So we have introvert tickets where they're on the ticketing site at thepsychicparlor.com. And you can go down, you know, there's standard tickets. There's also VIP up close couch seating as well. So the people who do want to be extra close. But then there's introvert seating, which is, I will not call on you during the show. There are some things that involve everyone all at once that people can kind of interact with from their seats.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I will not bring them up. And I'll, of course, like say hi to them before the show. And I even say to them, the joke I always do is, don't worry, this is the most I'll talk to you all night. You're safe over here.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's something I am trying to be very conscious of, but it is something that's so intrinsic to my work because a big part of it, ironically, is the skepticism, is the, oh, well, can he do it with me? Will he pick someone from our group? And when you come with a group of 5 to 10 people at a show that only seats 40, you're 25% of the audience. So someone in your group is going to be involved and you're going to have a conversation going home later. So
yeah.
Intimate is also very relative as well. Also in Lake Geneva, a very good friend of mine. I've done shows at Tristan Christ's Theater. They do a more traditional magic show. He cuts his assistant in half. They fly around the stage like superheroes and make a helicopter appear. And it's amazing. I've been backstage and I don't know where they keep the helicopter. It's a little disconcerting. But in all seriousness, their back row, they're only 175 seats, which again, compared to the 40 is like, oh, wow, so much bigger. But their back row is closer than Penn and Teller's front row in Las Vegas when I filmed for their TV show. That is still a more intimate space compared to that. And I have different things. Like there's one grand finale I do for my bigger shows that involves 26 people in the just in the grand finale. The whole show throughout, I do several things. There will be about 50 people that are directly involved with me during the show total. And there, again, several things where everyone is involved too.
Wow. Yeah, I love like being able to be a part of it or involved in some way, because I feel like, especially when I was a kid, I'd go to the magic show or some kind of like mind reading show, like being pulled up on stage makes you be like, I wasn't a part of it, or like I didn't see anything that happened, but like I saw it in front of my eyes happen. Like I always remember going to some kind of, I think it was when my sister was in college, they did like some kind of magic show there. And I remember I got pulled up on stage.
That tour colleges and stuff. And yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like I did something where they were like, close your eyes and hold this light bulb. It was something. And as soon as I opened my eyes, the light bulb turned on. And I was like, I don't know how I did it.
Could have been one of my very close friends, Chris Carter. They were the long light bulbs.
Yes, it was the long light bulb.
That's his signature. Yeah, I don't know how he does that either. Those aren't his light bulbs. He has like the booker or whoever hired him for like the company, like go to the store and buy them and bring them to the show. And like,
wow.
Yeah,
it's wild.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. He's from the Midwest as well, and he's taught me a lot, and he's amazing. And again, he works colleges. I always joke with him, yeah, the biggest thing you taught me is how much I do not want to work colleges. Or beyond. I mean, because he's been on the road like 300 days a year. I'm very spoiled. I get to, you know, again, I do my fair share of traveling for this line of work. I've flown out of town for different things, and being in between Chicago and Milwaukee is a blessing. But like, yeah, compared to people like him who are just on the road every single day, it's like, I actually get to sleep in my own bed and eat dinner with my wife most nights a week, you know?
Yeah.
Even with something like the psych parlor, you know, when I was first starting, I wouldn't be home till like midnight, 1, 2 in the morning. I'm home by 10 p.m. most nights there.
Right.
So again, for having a line of work that normally is so predicated on all those things, the fact that I don't have to kind of carve out my own little niche without having to do all that, I've been very, very grateful for.
Yeah.
And yeah, because again, if someone specializes in, like, for example, weddings, well, there's only 100 Friday Saturdays a year. So you're only going to book so many unless you can do several in a day. And for someone like me, where it's they either want me there the whole time mingling or at a specific time. And we all know they always run on time, right?
So, oh, yes.
And when they do come up, great. Because of things like the Maxwell and these other ticketed events I've done, I don't have to be as hungry for, like, again, being on the road all the time.
Yeah. And so you've done, I mean, so many different shows, different sizes, different kinds of people, I'm sure. Is there a time in your mind, like one of the wildest or most interesting reactions that you had from one of your shows, or a guest that was there? Just an interesting like story that kind of sticks out to you?
There's a lot for sure. I've had people scream. I've been hit. I've been slapped.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. To be fair, it's happened 2 or 3 times. It's been in like the arm 2 or 3 times, but once it was across the face and the woman was just like, ah, and it was just like this and just her hand hit just right.
Because she couldn't believe what you did?
Yeah. Her hand just hit just right to like echo through this space we were in. It was at a Del Webb type community for anyone who knows what they are. So it just echoed, and it was before I had a beard. So like it was extra skin on skin whack. Yeah. And it sounded way worse than it was. I always use a handheld mic. So yeah. I went off mic and she was, and this is part of the reason, because she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please don't hate me. And I said, I'm absolutely fine. I'm going to make a joke and we're going to move on. We'll be fine. And then I got on the mic and was like, no, it's my fault. I should have seen that coming. And I thanked her, sent her back to her seat. I said, whoever's sitting next to her, you know, look out. If she reacts more during the show, might want to scooch over a little, you know. So we had fun with it, of course.
Yeah. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah, it was. So there's several things that I do pretty much in every show. I have different ways of framing it or scaling it. So one of the things I'll do is I'll have people think of like names of friends or family members. Now, sometimes I'll adjust that depending on, just for lack of a better term, the season. Like I will have people think of, like I did a time travel show once, a themed show. And so I said, think of someone from your past that you no longer talk to. No one you had an epic falling out with, just someone you've lost track with over the years and never really connected with on Facebook. It's been a while since you've seen this person. And I have those different things to fit kind of the theme of the show, but also, because again, the other thing I've got to address in my shows is, oh, has he looked us all up on social media? Is he doing it? And I genuinely don't, but I still have to go out of my way to show, not just tell, but like show I'm not doing that by having people picked at random or picking up on things that aren't normally thought of. So yeah, having someone think of like, again, a friend, a family member, someone they used to know, those kinds of things. I'll have people think of like old pin codes. At Halloween, I'll have them think of old costumes. Wow. At Christmas time, I'll have them think of old gifts. But it's all the same framing for what I do. And in many ways, the joke I say is at the beginning of my show, when I have two people on stage and I tell each of them just what color they're thinking of, the joke I say is, that's it. That's all I do. Don't worry, we'll keep doing it for the next hour. But the idea is that we start with colors, then go into shapes, then numbers, and then I have someone think of cards they're holding in like a game. We play psychic poker. Then I have someone think of a drink they'd order at the bar. I talk about more empathy versus telepathy. So then I work with different people's emotions. Then we think of specific thoughts like friends, family members. Then some stuff where someone thinks of someone in the room and I have to find them without asking them any questions. That's all I'll say about the show without spoiling anything else. Because another part of it too is people just love the surprise too. And even when it's the same thing for me, because someone's always thinking something different and they're always going to react differently. People want to bring their friends to see how they'll react. So that kind of has the surprise baked into it as well. Because yeah, I might get every once in a while, I'm way, way off. It's not the line I say in the show is mind reading is an art, not a science. So I'm not always going to be 100% accurate, but I'm hopefully more close than not. And it's interesting when people go, wow, I've never seen you get that wrong before. Like we have seen you a couple times. That's still kind of interesting and surprising for them, even though it's the least impressive outcome. But I also make a point of like, hey, this is about having fun and connection. And the other, I call it the dirty secret of my show, which is, yes, my name is on the advertising. It says I'm the star of the show, but that's not really true. The real star of the show is the audience. The show is about the audience. When you look at mystical characters in film and literature, like when someone, if you were watching a Twilight Zone episode that had a mind reader in it, it wouldn't start with the mind reader. It would start with people going to the mind reader and having that discussion of, I think this is real. I think it's a load of bunk. What do you think? And the weird stuff happens in the mind reader show. And now we follow these two people leaving. So I'm kind of trying to see the show through that lens of a real life Twilight Zone experience and giving them as much the starring role of it and the interaction of it way more than just being about, I'm always being right. When it is about them and when it is that, if I'm not 100% accurate, I've also structured everything and I've got lines and jokes where even if I'm completely wrong and nothing works, I can move on to the next thing. Like it's funny, I've gotten things wrong in shows and still have had people come up going, so what do? Are you ever wrong? Because they had just forgotten. That was the one thing out of a whole hour. They just forgot.
Yeah.
It does. What I think matters is that Maya Angelou quote of like, people may forget what you said or did, but they won't forget how you made them feel. So I'm shooting for that as much as possible, because then if I'm a little off, if I get a name or mispronounce it or misspell it or something, it's not as much of a glaring error.
Right.
And like with juggling, either catch the clubs or you don't. With magic, the helicopter appears or it doesn't. The girl gets put back together or she doesn't. Yeah. So, and when those go wrong, there's more on the line with those going wrong than with me, ironically.
Right. So, I'm sure it's all about how you like respond to it and what happens next of like entertaining, making a joke about it. If you just like stood there and were like, oh my God, I messed that up. You know, like people would feel, like remember it more.
Well, the other thing too is I poke fun at myself during the show as well, because so there's two types of people at my show, people who are at the very least, even if they're not full on believers, they're interested in this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it's their skeptical partner they've dragged along.
I was going to ask about that.
And it's funny to the point where I can pretty much say to a couple, when I say, thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for being dragged along. And like, I've had a few people go, oh my God, he is psychic. How did he know that? I'm like, it's because you're here everywhere. That's not the psychic part. She hasn't started yet. But the line I say in the show now is, my wife is the biggest skeptic I've ever met, so it's okay if you're skeptical. She said to my face, it's not so much you're psychic, you're just a straight white guy with empathy. To be fair, in this era, that's a miracle. And when they're not taking it myself that seriously, they're not out to challenge or prove or disprove it. We're there to have a good time. If someone is taking it a little too seriously, I've even said to someone like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but this isn't church. There was a ticket price. You don't have to believe a single word I say. We can just have fun.
Just enjoy yourself. Yeah.
Exactly.
So. I mean, that's like when you see similar things post online, everyone's like, oh, they searched it ahead of time. They Googled, you know, there's all those skeptics out there. And it's like, do people have fun? Do people enjoy it?
And that's always the thing too, like, for a lot of that stuff. And that's why even with the stuff I've done online, I do try to make it so that all those questions, I mean, they're come up one way or another in my art form. It's just going to, that's kind of the point. But I really try to, again, make it about the people. When I show the clips of the show, I don't even show that much of what I'm doing. I'll just show people's reactions, people laughing or gasping or hugging me or hitting me sometimes. Like showing that and showing that happens regularly becomes a different story than is it real or not? How's he finding it out? It's more of like what's going on in this interaction that's causing these people to react like that. It's the same reason why the fact that we want to be in a show where the audience does implement what happens, I think is part of the reason why comedians doing crowd work clips online have kind of blown up in the last few years, because people, even when there's always someone who's like, oh, this was obviously staged. Look, he's not even really on the stage. And are there a few people who like use laugh tracks and stuff like that? Yeah, of course. However, for the most part, we want to feel like we were a part of something that has never happened before and will never happen again. I don't worry too much about people thinking that with the stuff online anymore, because like I perform regularly. You can come see for yourself. And if you don't want to, you know, then that's okay too.
Right.
The customer's always right, but not everyone's a customer.
Yeah.
And like some people are my audience, some people aren't. Art is like a magnet, I think Jimmy Carr said. It's like it attracts some people and repels others, and both are totally fine. So
Yeah. No, absolutely. So I know you want to do an audience mind reading, like intuition test.
Do and with everyone as well. So listening. Yeah.
Awesome. Do you want to do that? Or do you want to, I know you say you also have a lot of wild stories. So what?
I'll tell you what, both. Let's do a quick intuition test. And after that, we can do some stories. And then I have something planned for at the end of this too. So we can kind of give everyone a little bit of a taste and also give you a chance to see how this mind reading stuff really works. And also gives you and everyone listening a chance to know what it feels like to get this wrong and to get it right. When I do this in live shows, it usually gives me a chance to see who else in the room is the most intuitive. So here's how this is going to work, Krista. I'm going to think about a memory from my past.
Okay.
I'm going to do my best to project it to you and the listeners. Even though this is recorded, I've done this with recordings and it does still work pretty significantly, I found, for people who are truly listening. If the listeners are able to close their eyes, please do. Of course, if you're running or driving, of course, don't worry about it. But if you can, it does usually help. So we'll do this with you and I, and then later on, we can see how it does with the listeners. So for starters, take a deep breath and exhale, or you'll suffocate. Very good. All right, now, Krista, you're going to look at me for this. Everyone else, again, listening can close their eyes. But since we're talking in real time, you can take another deep breath. And as you exhale, just get in your mind a number from 1 to 10. Lock in your mind, don't change it, remember that number, okay? Don't try to think about these things too much, just go with whoever comes to you naturally. Intuition is knowing without knowing. We're gonna do it again. Take another deep breath. As you exhale, get in your mind a direction on a compass. Again, lock in your mind, don't change it, remember that direction.
Okay.
All right, this last one's gonna be the most difficult. This time, I want you to think of two simple geometric shapes, one inside the other, like a square inside of a rectangle, for example. Don't pick either of those. I just said them. Take a deep breath. Exhale. Remember those two shapes.
Okay.
All right. I'm curious, first of all, to see how you did. And then if anyone listening wants to, should they like message the podcast? Should they message me on Instagram?
Yeah. I mean, they could comment. I mean, I post the full thing on YouTube. So they can always comment on YouTube. That's why
on YouTube, if people can go to the YouTube page and actually comment if this did work with them. I'm really curious. We'll see how this worked with you as well. So I was thinking of a pretty common memory. Again, this is likely your first time doing this, so I wanted to keep it simple. I was thinking about my first day of school and I couldn't find geometry class. So I asked someone where it was and they said it was on the north side of the building. When I got to the classroom, I noticed there were 7 students there already. And when I looked at the chalkboard, the teacher had already drawn a circle and a triangle. So right off the bat, did you get either of those?
Circle, triangle, and north.
And north. Okay. Here's the interesting thing. I don't know what this is. If people don't get the number of students, very often I found sometimes they go for 3. Is that what you did?
Yes.
Okay. There we go. Perfect. Okay. So now, of course, this is more psychological than it is psychic, but it does a couple things. Number one, it shows you how this intuition stuff really works, because there is a level of 9 times out of 10, every single day, we all make some kind of decision and then later on go, ah, I should go off my initial gut instinct. Mm-hmm. So much of my work is just skipping that part, skipping that. So here's how we'll do this next part here. I've got a notepad here. I'm going to draw something here. While I draw this, here comes the drama. It's a little too long to write, so I'm just going to write down drama. So Krista, be honest, when you were younger, have like a tree, or sometimes it's like a picnic table in like a park or forest preserve that has a bunch of like initials and hearts written and carved on them. Okay. But you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know kind of what you're talking about.
Where people would put like, you know, the heart, and then obviously 14-year-olds with their first crushes, they put their initials.
Right.
And forever. Yeah. And then you go back a few years, it's crossed out, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. It's okay if you never actually did that, but you can visualize that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I want you to imagine, we kind of go back in time in your mind a little bit, and you can see one of those trees, and you can go up and you can carve like a little heart in it, mm-hmm. and you put your initials in. And what I'd like you to do next is to think of just one of the people you can remember having a crush on when you were younger. Now, a couple quick things about this. Just think of their initials, okay? It can be a celebrity crush too. And it doesn't have to be like the very, very first one you told them or anything like that. It could have been a secret crush. It could be, and I won't pry for this, okay? Since this is a podcast and going back, that's why we're just sticking with initials for this situation. But at this point right now, again, we've talked on social media, but there's no way I could know whose initials you decided on just now. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Right.
Got them in mind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is going to sound a little strange, but I'm going to ask you to look right at your camera, not at the screen at me, but look right at your camera.
Okay. Okay.
Think of both those initials and don't react. And here I go. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. Okay, I'm also going to do this backwards. Z, Y, X, W, V, U, T, S, R, Q, P, O, N, M, L, K, J, I, H, G, F, E, D, C, B, A. Okay, I think you might have stopped thinking of the initials because you were like, oh my gosh, he actually can do this backwards. I'm going to do this once more. Think of both the initials one more time. ZYXWVUTSRQP1MLKJIHGFEDCBA. Okay. I believe, I'm going to say it. Both initials are different. Yes. It's not the same initial twice. Both are different. You know what? I'm going to go for it too. I'm going to say they're both consonants. Yes. Neither is a vowel.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I think I got it then. I'm going to write this down just to extra commit so people don't just think you're just saying yes to whatever I say. Okay. I've written that down. I'll leave the pad up here in frame so you can keep an eye on it. What's the initials of the person you're thinking of? You can tell us.
TJ.
One more time, you kind of lagged out.
TJ.
TJ. Did they actually go by TJ by any chance? Do you remember?
I mean,
not that you recall. They went by like their actual first name, is what I'm saying. They didn't go by like the initials. Like my dad sometimes calls me JD sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I'm thinking my initial person, their initials were TJ.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that they didn't try reaching out to you after this, because that is exactly what I got, TJ.
That's crazy. Wow. That is wild.
People can watch back on YouTube and see that I did in fact draw a heart with Krista's initials and then TJ underneath. I am going to, I'll take a picture of this too and send it to you so we can
Put
it on Instagram and all that later. So that's a perfect example too of you receiving thoughts from me, but also you sending thoughts to me as well. There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on in the show too, where either I'm picking up on thoughts from other people, but there are also points where they're picking up on thoughts from me. and I'm trying to find. And there are different things in the shows that I do that involve different people's intuitions and such. And again, part of also your reaction was priceless there too, by the way. Thank you.
I was just like shocked. I was like, there's no way.
Or over Zoom. How is he going to do it over Zoom?
I was only thinking like third grade, my first crush. And yeah. I'm like, I haven't thought of this person in how long ago was that? 30, almost 30 years, probably.
When you were two, not in second grade, when you were two, right? Right? Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll do more at the end, of course, but that's a little bit of a sneak peek. Okay. I'm also curious if anyone else picked up on this, because I know some people are just listening. Some people could see you, wondering if anyone else. Because normally what I'm just doing is I'm just trying to feel which letter feels right, basically, and then trying to get them in the right order. But yeah, but I'm really glad. Every once in a while, just for example, this is another thing too. Sometimes I've gotten the initials reversed, but like people will still kind of give that to me, even though it's technically wrong. It's like, okay, you were right. You know, it's there. In the course of a whole show, again, if something like that happens, it's not the end of the world. I'd rather that than get both or just even one of the two initials incorrect. But even when I do pick up on it, like one of the other day I said to a woman, I'm getting a motherly vibe, but this isn't your mother. And she was like, and her eyes went wide. And she's like, she just had her first kid. Like,
wow.
It wasn't even on social media yet or anything. So even when I'm wrong, there's still a reason why I'm picking up on what I'm picking up on. It is, again, much more about the intuition, the empathy, the connecting with people. Mind reader just sounds more show busy and interesting than feeling feeler.
Right, right.
I'm feeling other people's feelings. So yeah, so that's a little bit of an insight into how that works. And in the show too, I talk about like, yep, I still have stupid stuff happen to me. And I tell some stories about that too and everything. Part of the fun of it is, again, you never know how people are going to react or what they're going to think of. So yeah.
Wow. I'm blown away. That's wild.
Thank you.
Can't even comprehend that. Okay, so let's jump into, you said you have a lot of wild stories of things that you've either seen at shows or witnessed. What's one of the stories that you would want to share?
Do you want one? Well, I'm going to ask you, do you want like just a wild story or two full stop, or do you want particularly wedding related?
It doesn't need to be wedding related.
Okay. Before I say this, there's literally one piece of advice I try to give people for events, and it's only half the time. You'll see what I mean in a moment. If there's only one, after doing all these different events, I've been at people's house parties, their 50th anniversaries, 50th birthdays, weddings, vow renewals, all of them, bachelor parties, bachelorette parties, divorce parties. There's one thing I've learned. It's easier to move outside than it is to move inside. Don't count on good weather. When people have like the food under a tent outside, I'm just like, you are inviting disaster. Have it in the kitchen. Before my show, I was just setting up in the living room because the skies were looking a little not so great. And they opened up and the wind blew in. And the uncle tried to run in the rain with a big plaque full of ribs and tripped and over the floor. And if it was just inside, luckily it wasn't during my show, but still, that is, are you okay? All this other stuff. Just if it was, had just started inside, like I get it, as Midwesterners, we have seasonal blindness. We think just because it's summer, it's going to be great. And then when it's the winter, we're somehow surprised. Like, what? I can't believe, you know, every year there's someone on the news complaining that they have to shovel snow. I'm like, yeah, same time every year.
Happens so, every year. Yeah.
First week of January. What do you know? And it sounds so simple and kind of like, yeah, duh, ridiculous. But those are often the ones that go overlooked. That said, no matter how much you plan, just never know. Very early in my career, I was setting up for a show. And they had a mechanical bull going. And it didn't look like we were getting closer and closer to my contracted showtime. It didn't look like they were turning that off anytime soon. And I went to the woman hosting the event and I was like, hey, are we going to turn the mechanical bull off during the show? And she sincerely looked at me and went, why? Because we'll be doing the show. She's like, well, people can do that too. I'm like, so during the show, all right, think of the name of this person, think of how many letters. Just off. Right. All right, think of this. It's like, oh my God. So now I probably would have, and I'm sure we've all had this where like, we have to be a little firmer with the customers. Like they think they want it a certain way, but like another one is always, hey, let's have me on after dinner before awards. Like, no, we want you as the grand finale. We want you as the grand finale. Last two times they did that, after people had their awards and they had been fed, literally up to half the room left as they were
booked it.
As they were introducing me.
Oh no.
I'm just like
entertainment early.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, everyone in the back, let's move forward. Let's make this feel less like a bus stop. That's a friend of mine's show, busking. It's like, let's make this feel more like a show and less like a bus stop. Come on, let's get in close and enter and connect and stuff. Cause yeah, when you've got tables and gaps of people, it's just harder for everyone to kind of, again, connect, basically. The point of this is connection. I've been pretty lucky with weddings in particular, overall, like the ones I've actually performed at. The wedding I didn't perform at, because 3 weeks beforehand, they called saying it was canceled. The groom had run off with the bride's best friend, Jeremy. Oh. So, yeah.
The bride's best friend, Jeremy?
Jeremy, yes. So there was a lot to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack there, yeah. Yes.
So,
wow.
Humans are complicated. They had another event for his work, so they were able to. That's the thing, too. Like, normally when people book, it's for a specific date and time. I don't want to be on the hook with someone forever. But if they call and it's something like ridiculous like that, because that's the other thing people don't realize, too, is like they're not paying for the show that day. They're paying for the 6 months of you telling everyone else no for that date and time.
Yes.
And also, in my opinion, builds better trust because they know I'm not going to abandon them for something for more money. But no.
We're both holding the date.
Yes, we're both holding the date. It's very clear. And of course, if I'm sick for any reason and unable to do it, which I've only had to do this once in my career, knock on wood, give them a choice of a backup entertainer or just a refund. But they had another company event coming up like just in the next month, and they had booked me for other stuff before. And it was their daughter. So it was like, yeah, she'll need to be cheered up. So,
Oh my God.
So that was probably like, I mean, at least it didn't happen at the wedding. You know, okay, at least that. Again, what I've done actually more than even weddings have been like bridal parties and rehearsal dinners, like the night before when it is just the smaller family and it is, for lack of a better term, more intimate.
Yeah.
Because it's also two sides of the family that maybe don't know each other super well. Mm-hmm. So rather than trying to make something work during the bride and groom's big day, which is I've done that show and it's worked. But I think even better for like, yes, it's about them, but it's about all of us. You all have a big day tomorrow. This is the time to kind of cut loose and have fun and get to know one another. And again, because there's the blend of half the people know only half the people. They know the other people aren't in on it and they have something to talk about. They have a shared experience now too. Mm-hmm. I have found I've been very lucky that those have been great. None of those have been the problem gigs. Probably the absolute worst gig I ever did was, again, fairly early in my career. I was on after a band at like this mini festival. And the guy started introducing me as the band was striking their stuff. And no one was paying attention. Like, I didn't hear what he was saying. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to get him back up here to reintroduce me. And I just put my stuff up. And one of the guys from the band goes, oh, dude, did he introduce you? Don't worry, I'll stall. Ladies and gentlemen, he's going to invade your minds, mister. What's your name again, bro? Joe Diamond. Joe Diamond. Like, I'm like, oh no. Now people are watching. Yeah. So now I have the opposite problem. So right. I start, they're still striking. Every other word you can't hear because they're unplugging all their instruments and amps, all the ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. They finally finish. I'm into like, I only have to do like a 20-minute set too. That's the worst part. It felt like I've done hour shows that haven't felt this long. And I'm like, at the halfway mark, I'm like, okay, I've got them. And literally, beep, beep, the next band is backing their truck in and it's just a curtain.
Oh my gosh.
And I just stopped and just started laughing. I was just like, some things just aren't meant to be. I did have a few people who came up to me afterwards and said, hey, good job. That must have been really tough. Now I feel like, again, just the level of planning of like, okay, I have written on my introduction, do not introduce me until I'm ready. There's this, yeah. That. I have actually some pre-show music and stuff that like gets people's attention too for like louder events. And it's only a mistake if you don't learn from it. And I try to learn as much as possible. So I've avoided disasters much bigger than that. There's some stories that my friends have told that beat me every single day, but they're not my stories to share.
No, I get that. Yeah, no, I feel like those early days, or I feel like everything is just like you learn from. I know early days of like being a part of weddings and doing different things, I'm like, take note for next time. You just like, and people will people. So you learn from different people.
People will people. Oh my God. This ended up being a great show because I've done a few bachelor and bachelorette parties because sometimes they don't want to get in trouble with a, we'll just say, adult entertainer of some kind.
Yes.
No shade against that or anything like that. I have friends in that industry, all that stuff, but some people just don't want to, it's an extra layer of drama they don't want to deal with. And that is totally fine. That said, no one gave the memo to grandma. So I showed up and she just looked me up and down and kind of scrunched her face and just went, you the stripper? Like she was so disappointed that this 5'7" guy, I'm not that tall. And we were like, grandma, he's the mind reader. And I was like, oh, no, I will strip. It's just going to cost everyone $20 each to leave. And she laughed because they just said they just didn't think to say to grandma that this
tell
is,
her.
Yeah, to tell her that there was entertainment that wasn't that. But still, she was still not as disappointed as the bachelor parties I've done.
But they're like, wait, what's going on here?
Well, not only that, they've worked, of course, but there's still just that level of, with everyone too, it doesn't really matter about gender, just of like skepticism and like, wait, are we really going to do this? And again, as I've gotten, now I can send to my clients, you know, a clip of me performing on the biggest stage in Las Vegas and reading Brooke Burke's poem, and they can just send that to their friends and they go, oh yeah, this will probably be good. So now I don't have to win them over quite as much up front because of all that word has kind of spread.
Right.
But yeah, for the most part, like you got to just roll with it. When grandma asks if you're the stripper and she's clearly disappointed.
Oh, grandmas, they just say what's on their mind. You just got to let them roll with it.
Hey, drama lovers, big news. My book, Here Comes the Drama, A Ferris and Sloan Story, is officially out now. If you've been following their wild wedding saga online, this is the full story, packed with messy twists, sharp banter, family chaos, and all the heart you've come to love. And judging by your messages and posts, you're loving it too. Huge thanks to everyone who's already grabbed a copy early and shared it on social media. Your support means everything. If you haven't read it yet, now is the time. Head to KristaEnnis.com/book or click the link in the show notes. It's available in both print and ebook. Grab your copy before the spoilers start showing up in the comment sections, because trust me, you'll want to experience every jaw-dropping moment for yourself.
Are you ready to react to this?
Yes. Oh, yes. I am so ready. So
here we go. Okay. So as always, this was submitted by one of the followers here. So I've not read it yet. Feel free to stop me and react and we'll just see what happens. And then at the very end, for everyone listening, you're going to do another little mind trick.
We'll do something at the end.
So, all right, cool. Here we go. It says, hey, my fiance's parents started out really nice. We met in May and were together for about 4 months before getting engaged, which I know is fast. Throughout our relationship, we saw his parents regularly, and I truly hoped to build a good relationship with them. As we started planning the wedding, the first issue came up over the mother-son dance. The DJ had suggested shortening all the dances, and when that was mentioned, his mom was outraged. I'm just going to pause there. I feel like that's a very normal thing now to be like, we don't need to dance 4 minutes with every single person. I know I shortened my
wedding. That, and just real quick, the way, I know you're reading this for the first time, but the way you said it, that when you said, the mother's sun dance, I was like, is this like a thing where she dances at sundown? Like, I was like, oh yeah, mother and sun dance. I thought
mother and sun dance. Yeah, she, wrote it as like mother-sun. So I was like, mother, sun dance. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so there was a moment, because I actually have hosted a couple of, for lack of a better term, pagan ceremonies, non-traditional ceremonies, practicing witches, practicing mystics, and such. I've heard the Hecate blessing instead of, you know, the prayer and all that. So I was immediately going like, okay, but what's a Sundance? Like,
is there a Sundance and a Moondance? Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's sundown, right? We're not getting married at like 5 a.m, right? Like,
right. What's happening?
Okay, so the mother and son dance. Okay, so
yes, didn't want so it far, short.
People, the DJ has suggested, hey, the songs you've picked, they're all like 4 minutes each. That's a long time with transitions in between. We're talking, that's easily going to be a 20-minute hump where we all just watch two people dance if we're going to do the full songs.
Yeah, and you got to think for like people watching, that's boring.
We don't get to dance yet. You get those songs in half. That's down to like 8 to 10 minutes tops if there's technical issues or whatever. And yeah, that I think is the sweet spot.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure we shortened all ours to like a minute and a half because then people get to see it. That's enough dancing. Also, people so like after this first time so dancing.
I promise we'll still do the interactive thing at the end. However, after this, I'll tell you the story of our wedding because it's like Geneva related and there's a fun kind of story with it as well.
Oh, but cool. Okay.
Kind of tease that as well. Now, just to be clear, does she only want the mother son dance not shortened or does she want all of them not shortened? Or is that
I'm guessing it's more about her dance with her son.
Okay.
She's taking offense to it.
That's not the craziest thing, you know? Okay. And it depends on what the song is too. Like there's some songs you just don't cut off in the middle.
Don't cut.
Especially if it's the mom. Okay. Continue. All right.
All right. Let's see. She said, we ended up sitting down to talk about it because she was upset for me even bringing it up, even though I just repeated what the DJ had recommended and didn't think it would be such a big deal. After that, things calmed down a bit, but the dynamic definitely felt different. I tried to move on and understand her perspective, especially since she openly favors my fiance and likely feels like she's losing him. Recently, though, everything exploded.
Pause again. Okay, so it's the mother-son dance. So this is a likely, we can assume bride, not another husband, a bride.
That wrote it in, yeah.
Okay. And it's the son. Has she said if the son is like only child, oldest, youngest?
No, she hasn't said yet. But I feel like when she says openly favors, I'm either wondering if he has another sibling and like he's like the golden child.
I mean, if you are marrying into the family, yeah, your partner is going to be more favored by the people who gave birth to and raised them. You know, like, of course that. So, okay.
Yeah, that's why I feel like she
might be reading a little too much into it here, but we'll see where it goes. Okay.
Yeah. She had a complete meltdown and called him blaming me for almost everything under the sun. She accused me of initially excluding her family from our wedding planning, the wedding day itself. There's a lot more to that, but that's the summary. So my fiance and I sat down with both of his parents, and he explained that none of that was my doing, and that if anyone felt excluded, it was because of decisions he had made. That conversation lasted for 4 hours. Oh my gosh. So I feel like this all stems from the fact that she feels like she's losing her son, and that she's going to try to make it more about her day and want it her way.
Yeah. So first off, kudos to husband, partner, fiance for taking charge.
Hey, mom,
listen, take the brunt of it, sit down and talk for the 4 hours. So far, green flags for the fiance. Yes, do get through whatever hell you have to marry them. Yes. So far, he's worth it. And it sounds like the issue is going to be mostly between him and the mom now, but we'll see.
Another issue came up about us not inviting children to the wedding. She was furious.
Pause right there. Nope. Mom lost all credibility. I 1000% agree. Children should not. If you are going to have an open bar, I will even argue not the party, not even the ceremony.
Are you saying at any wedding?
I'm saying across 99% of all across the board.
Wow, now, that is a hot take.
Here's a couple issues with kids. It's actually not the kids, it's the parents. And it just becomes about the kid now. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand, and yes, we might not all have a teen or preteen flower girl or ring bearer. They may only be 3 or 4. And yeah, it's cute for like the 3 second clip of them like walking down the aisle. But like, you know, then you're paying for the cake and all that. Because here's the other thing too, I will argue. Nine times out of 10, if there are kids at a wedding / wedding adjacent type event, any entertainer they book, DJ, comedian, mind reader, I'm saying this because this has happened.
Yeah.
All the parents think, oh, that's the babysitter. That's now in a separate room. And this is problematic for the entertainer because it's like, wait, I'm alone in a room with everyone's kids. That's not right. While everyone else is drinking. That's not good. No, that's not a good position I want to be in. So it's one thing if you want to hire child care, which I think if there are any levels of kids there, whoever wants them has to give in to any kind of child care, nannying, whatever, daycare, because this exists. This happens. They have them for company events for single parents. So like the parents can still, you know, attend the event, and it's at conference centers, it's at wedding venues. They have caterers. They have someone who's professional and vetted to watch kids too. So if you're going to go that far, especially if they're going to make the argument of, oh, it's only two or three, then okay, then you contribute for that. If it's that important to you, I don't think any kid has outweighed the adorableness factor for how much of a pain it's been for the rest of the day. There's a saying in show business, don't work with kids or animals. Like in TV, there's a reason every baby in every TV show is twins.
Yeah.
Like, because when one's cranky, hopefully the other isn't. That's why there was Mary-Kate and Olsen. That's why every baby in every show and movie is almost always a set of twins. For that exact reason. Because getting that on camera and all this stuff is next to impossible.
Yeah. And my thing is too, it's like when people get offended over like their kids not being invited. I've said this before. I have a toddler, like she's going to be 3 this year. And I'm like, I would not be offended because I get it. And sometimes my husband and I just want a night out without her. And she probably wouldn't have that much fun at a wedding. She maybe have fun for a little bit dancing, but
if she's not invited,
I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, they hate children. I'm like, I would never think that. I'd be like, I get it. I get it. You have kids touching everything. And I think
if there's any kind of bar, no kids, vice versa, cash or otherwise, like all that just does not mix. It just does not mix. I've almost never seen it pay off. If the kids are a little older, if there's like a very hard and fast, like 13 and over because of certain cousins' ages and stuff like that, I understand. Everything's a case-by-case basis, of course.
Oh, for sure. I think you know if the kids like in your family are going to be okay or not. And if the bride and groom are saying no, they're probably like, I think the ones we know are not going to be
okay. Here's the next part. This is the mom, right?
Yeah.
The mom definitely doesn't have little kids. I mean, it could happen. Maybe they're early 20s and they have a 18-year gap between him and his younger 8-year-old sister or something. Maybe. But especially for the mom who likely doesn't have her own kids. Or, I don't know, day before the wedding shower, do like a fun wedding tea thing with all the kids or something. Have them dress up and do that at noon the Saturday before or something. But immediately, as soon as someone is like, nope, I'm like, It does drastically depend. I've done a lot of house parties where there are a few younger kids or a good number of younger kids. And 9 times out of 10, when it's that kind of dynamic, they often want to be kind of little grown-ups. They want to be sit tight for the show. They'll kind of, which is also why I go on a little later, so that way they've run out of steam and everything. Yeah. And I have little things that they can for sure help with. I always carry one thing with me specifically for kids that I can do.
Yeah.
But I also let the host and everyone know that, because that also means I am not the babysitter. I have one thing specifically for them. The show isn't offensive. The show is clean and everything, but it's not, it's geared for intelligent grownups, just like a bar.
You know? Yes.
There's nothing offensive for the most part for 99% of the population of just like the presence of a bar.
Yeah.
Mom is upset. So, okay. So there's no kids. And she likely doesn't even have kids of her own. Okay.
Right. So she says she was furious that we wouldn't invite his second cousin's daughter. So we're talking distant. Like, I don't even know if I invited any of my second cousins.
Cousins, former roommate.
Yeah. Right. That's ridiculous. Cause like,
that make us absolutely nothing.
Right. I'm like, I invited all my niece and nephews. So we had 5 and they were super well behaved, but I also knew like their parents were more hands on. But yeah, it's definitely case by case. Again, you know your own family. And like, cause I've heard stories where people are like, my niece is so misbehaved. Her parents don't watch her. She will throw things. She'll push things on the floor. That's where it's like bride and groom or the couple getting married. It's their choice. Don't beg to bring your child. Just let them make their own decision. She originally told us that the cousin wouldn't come unless their child could attend. Okay, then she can't come.
Yeah.
And that his cousin was the only extended family member planning to come. When we asked for the cousin's phone number so we could talk to them directly, she suddenly admitted she already told them yes on our behalf. And there was actually no...
Oh, so mom's busted now. Mom
oh my gosh,
mom
that would make me busted. So bad.
Mom yeah. is straight busted.
So, oh no.
Oh no.
And then she lied and said there was actually no issue with them attending without their children. She still claimed I was purposely excluding her family and made several hurtful assumptions about me. So it sounds like the mom is just like mad at the fact that like maybe they don't have a lot of close family. So she's like, we have to have the second cousin there because they're going to have more people. So she has to come with her child. It's like,
yeah,
not your choice.
That's the other thing too. Everything's case by case. If you have a ton of 7 to 12-year-olds, like they can all kind of watch each other. You slip the 15-year-old an extra $50 or $100 bill to, hey, keep an extra eye on them until 6 o'clock when their parents are going to take them home or something. Realize that there's a whole other level of plan. You can't just say, kids are allowed. There has to be a whole other level of planning. There has to be a hard out time. There's just more questions and more things to prepare and plan that have nothing to do with you. On a day that's supposed to be all about you. So I would, especially if it's just one, then especially no. Like, no.
Yeah. When my fiance tried to explain, we were just trying to sort everything out. She threatened not to come to the wedding and said the rest of his family wouldn't come either if the 13-year-old wasn't invited. Oh, so she's
13. Oh, it's a 13-year-old?
13-year-old. And I'm like, at that age, they probably, I mean, depends, but they probably don't even want to come. Depends on how close they are. I'm like, I didn't even invite any of my second cousins to my wedding.
Trying to think, again, I'm going to go this kind of direction just briefly. I can see maybe the mom. So my late mother was actually my cousin's nanny for the first like 6-7 years of his life. I called her Auntie Trudy, but she like worked for my aunt, her sister-in-law, as his nanny. And she's not a blood relative to my cousin Bobby, who is the one being nannied. But like if he was being invited somewhere or if he was like she was invited to his graduation, he's not married, but if he ever did get married, I'd assume, yeah, she'd be invited because she's not just his aunt, but she also took care of him for a long time. If the mom had some kind of relationship like that, maybe if there was some, but like none of that. And then on top of it, like the mom wanted drama.
Yeah.
Wanted
she's already
drama.
Upset about something.
Because here's the thing too. You could get away with a 13-year-old not being a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That could have just completely flown under the radar the whole day. Not a problem. Oh, no kids? Okay. Well, because like a 13-year-old isn't a kid. It's
a teenager already.
Have had their growth spurt and it's all that. It's like, yeah, they probably will just be like, you know, they're just going to sulk in the corner and be an awkward 13-year-old. But if they're having fun with their second cousins and aunts and uncles and her mom and stuff, then okay. Like, I think that could have very easily been to me, like, okay, like, yeah, that's not a kid, that's a teenager, which is a whole other thing.
It's the mom just trying to cause some drama and trying to control something. Because we also don't even know if the second cousin said anything. Like, maybe the second cousin was like, I don't care if they come or not, I'll still go. Maybe at that point, the invitations weren't even out and they didn't even know if they were going to invite the second cousin. But the mom's like, oh, well, she won't come without this because. I have heard of families like that where they already have this crazy list of people that haven't even talked to the bride or groom in years. And they're like, we weren't even going to invite them. They're like, but it's my second cousin. And they're like, why are you inviting people that like I don't have a relationship with? So I feel like at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't even matter. Even if the person was 21 years old and that's their kid, it's like, if they don't have a relationship with them or didn't think to include them, then they're not as important to them as to the mom.
Yeah. There's something more going on with her wanting. She wanted something to come to a head with this gal her boy's marrying. There's something deeper there. I don't buy that it's, yeah.
Okay, so like to kind of finish that part, she says the rest of the family wouldn't show up either if the 13-year-old wasn't invited, or technically if she was uninvited, since his mom had already taken it upon herself to say yes. Like we did only 21 and older at our wedding, so anyone that was under Because I had cousins that were like younger and I didn't invite them.
Sure. And if you've got like a bunch of cousins, you can't invite just one, you got to invite them all kind of deal.
Like, I got you. At 13, if it was like my parents' second cousin's wedding, I don't know if I would go to that. But if it was like aunt and uncle at 13, yeah. Oh yeah, I would have loved that. So it just depends on your relation.
Yeah. Like,
but my parents would never have been like, you have to invite my kid.
This is a roller coaster. Jeez. I could see again, like, if no kids means no one under 21. Yes. To me, when I say no kids, I think like no one 13 and under. Like, that's kind of where my brain was kind of at. Cause like, if one teenager comes, it's like, okay, well, then, oh, dang it. But that sucks. I feel bad for the teen. Like, what are they going to do? You know?
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, I think really what it comes down to is that the bride and groom said no. And the
I think that's the big thing. You got to just learn when to hold them, learn when to fold them. And like, I think the mom is trying to just not make it easy on them. I think the mom's trying to come up with anything possible that she can pivot. Because like, that's the other thing. There's lots of ways you can ruin a relationship or ruin a wedding. I think she's trying to come up. These are the only things that the only straw she's grasping at that she can turn around to be their slash her future and daughter-in-law's fault, which not. And everyone's seeing through. Like, no, you're just hiding it behind your back. No, like, we know what you're doing.
Yeah, she's fighting something.
Also, no one else in the family will come. Well, does the rest of the family know she's crazy? Because they might. Like, that's a bold move on the mom to think like, oh, everyone's going to.
Yeah, I hear this stuff all the time with these kind of people. They always threaten not to come. They'd be like, oh, if you don't do this, if you don't have your brother in the wedding, if you don't have this girl as a flower girl, will not come. And it's like, okay, then don't. Okay. Yes. She insisted then on speaking to my fiance alone. During that call, she told him she was embarrassed by our wedding, embarrassed by how we treated the family, and incredibly disappointed in him. After a lot of yelling and crying, she demanded that he come over to have a sit-down conversation with both parents without me. After we talked it through, he went, thinking it was the best option. That conversation lasted 3.5 hours. It's all this talking.
It's getting shorter. It's getting shorter. Okay.
A little shorter. Yeah. During it, they raised some concerns about me, basically saying I was fake and that I just say whatever people wanted to hear to smooth over the conversations. They implied I was a gold digger. Difficult
conversations. Well, first of all, okay. Well, let's get to the gold digger thing in a moment. I have kind of a weird theory that's just popped into all of this because this has happened to me as well. Okay. You're mad at her trying to smooth over the problems you're creating? Like, that's...
Oh my gosh, she's too kind? She's not causing more drama?
Yeah. This has been referenced a couple times where she says the mom has said the family. Mm-hmm. I have a new perspective on this and I might be projecting. This might be a mob thing. I was, again, early in my career. Again, the show was great, but this is just one of those little stories. It was in downtown Chicago. I took the train down and went to the venue and I was still getting paid on arrival cash. I now get, I don't go anywhere without a deposit now, but that's how long ago it was. And she was like, oh yeah, my husband will take care of you. And I'm like a little nervous about that. I'm like, does he know how much? Like, is he going to throw a stink? But he was fine. He was like, oh yeah, sure. It's like, love that you take cash. Cash is great in my business. And as he's saying that, he's taking out a rubber band, of no cards in between either. Cash, just stack. And I'm so young and naive. He starts peeling them off. He's like, good, I love cash in my business too. And I'm so young and naive, I go, oh, what business is that? And he literally stops, looks at me, looks back at the money, peels off what he owes me, peels off an extra 100 and just goes, the seafood business.
Oh.
And I'm like, love seafood. Yeah, seafood, wonderful. Right. Love it. That event went so well that like 2-3-ish years later, I'm doing another event and they're there. Someone at that party booked me for their party. And I see them and I grew up fast in show business doing all these events. And I just see him and I go, how's the seafood business? And there was a moment where like, when someone's like, what do they mean? It was just like a half second of that. And he goes, booming. So got it. Okay. Yep. That's all we're going to talk about. Yes. Again, we've been at some events where it's like, oh, that person, don't mess with Vinny. There's some events I've been at where it's like, okay, I'm getting some weird mob vibe. So now like disrespecting the family and now gold digger.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, that just doesn't happen when it's a family company. It happens when it's a family business. You know what I'm saying? So I'm weird, like matriarchal, even if it's not illegal, just some weird mob vibey. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I've read just like enough of these wedding stories. It's a pure mama's boy thing. I've seen in so many stories where the mom will call the new wife gold digger because there's some kind of jealousy or insecurity where the boy is leaving the house. And it's so weird, but they've completely, the second they call someone a gold digger, I'm like, you're done. Like,
sorry. Lost all credibility. Okay. So that's a little more, all right. So I might be reading too much into it, but
you might be onto it. I don't know. I've just seen it a lot in these stories. That's like their go-to thing is like, oh, she's a gold digger. She just wants you for your money. When that's even happened in stories where like the woman's making more than the man and the mom will be like, oh, she's a gold digger. She just wants you for this or that. And it's just their go-to insult I've found.
Yeah. Okay. So they called her a gold digger, said she's too nice. She's too flexible with all of our crazy demands. Like, come on. She's just a pushover.
Right. Okay. So then she did add, she said, his family is very well off and mine isn't. So they're just bringing out money in it.
Okay, fair, but...
Yeah, they even said, I exaggerate my pain to get out of family gatherings. For context, I've had 3 hip surgeries in the last 5 years. My most recent one was October 2024, and yet I haven't missed a single family gathering. The most I've done is step away to sit somewhere more comfortable to manage my pain. They also told him something along the lines of, we know once you make a decision, you stick with it, but we need you to tell us if this is really what you want, and we'll help you get out of it. So now they're trying to talk to him, get out of the wedding, meaning marrying me. He defended me, but it felt like once one issue was addressed, another one popped up immediately. By the time he came home after hours with them blaming me for everything, he was emotionally wrecked. This whole situation was breaking him. He keeps saying he wants to keep the peace, but at the same time, his mom is currently planning my bridal shower. I'd be like, I don't want her touching anything wedding related. Which was an olive branch I tried to extend a while ago. Now I feel like I don't want someone who thinks so poorly of me planning something meant to celebrate me. If you're listening to this now, I would say, tell her you no longer want her planning it. Have friends or your family do it, or don't have one. And I literally would not be going to an event of someone that like hates me.
Yeah. Is that it? Is that the end
There's
of it?
A little bit more.
Do a little bit more because I have one more theory of what they can do next, but let's hear the end of it.
He genuinely believes they like me. I don't know how I feel about this fiance anymore.
Oof.
How many times do you have to be told by your parents, she's the problem, she's a gold digger. Are you sure you want to do this?
I've definitely been toxic positive too much in my life. I can't throw a stone in that house. Continue. I still say, okay, he's not the red flag. That's been the biggest red flag for him so far. He's still doing
he's
all.
Not, I definitely wouldn't call him a red flag. I think he's definitely more, he's trying to keep the peace, like she said. But it's also, you have to look at the dynamic of his mom being very controlling and maybe manipulative. So he's like, I want everyone to be happy. These are people I all care about. They really do like you. I promise. You just don't know them yet. Like that kind of thing. That's hard. So he genuinely believes they like me and are just concerned. But I don't see how someone can like me while believing I'm fake, manipulative, and using him. He broke down crying and said he doesn't know how much more conflict he can take. And honestly, now I don't know what to do either. He's extremely involved with his family. He works for the family business. Oh.
Called it. I called it. I called that.
Mind reader.
Mind reader. Totally called that. Totally. Yes.
Okay, you might really be onto something. And they don't want her stealing from this family business or learning the secrets.
Did they say that? Did they say
that? No, I just am implying.
Okay. I was going to say. Okay, all right.
Well, she just said, and sees most of them every single day at work. Mm-hmm. So now I'm stuck wondering, do I keep the peace and hope he eventually realizes how toxic this is? Or do I finally speak up about how I feel and risk everything blowing up? Because I genuinely don't know. All right, so she needs some advice here.
Okay. Keep in mind, I am a straight white man. No one should listen to me. I do have empathy, but that's my only superpower.
Hey, empathy is a great superpower.
It is a great superpower, but then everything's your kryptonite. Okay. So now that. Okay. So I think there are options. I actually think, provided it is, setting aside the jokes about mob ties and everything, if it is a legitimate family printing business or brewery or something, there's no money laundering or anything like that, I would actually say put things on a 6-month hold and offer to work at the family business.
Oh.
I would say, hey, you clearly don't trust me yet. Now, you're opening yourself up to a lot of literal crap shoveling. You'll be cleaning the toilets and all those. I understand this is, in some ways, could be mentally and physically not the most safe. But if you are in their world, in their, for lack of a better term, because they have their own culture now. Like, what, you know, I was making all the jokes before, but if it's a family business and they're seeing each other every day, you're now this extra thing. I think there's got to be some level to where they can see the value of you, not just the value you bring to their son. Is that necessarily right or the best way or anything else? Probably not, but it is a suggestion that I think is a worthwhile exploration to take, or at least offer. Either way, I say pump the brakes a little, maybe reset some dates if you can. I know that's a pain in the butt, I know, but so is dealing with these people forever. This is the only like hard and fast advice I give to just about anyone. The way relationships begin, typically the way they continue. And I mean that with everything, with business. If you start having to chase a client, you don't have to keep chasing them. And that may be great for the once every 5-year payoff, for that one really big event they book you for. But you're going to be best off with a client that will meet you on even playing field and wants to work with you as much as you want to work with them. Mm-hmm. It's the same with romantic relationships. If you have to keep chasing and keep texting and keep doing all this, you have to keep doing that. Doesn't sound like this person has that with their fiance, but they definitely have it with the parent. And that is the one risk of doing this.
Yeah.
Not to say toxic cycles can't be broken and relationships can't be fixed. They absolutely can. But just typically, as a general rule, even if the two, her and the mom-in-law, become bosom buddies in 10, 15, 20 years, there's still going to probably be some form of tension. It's just shifted somewhere else.
Like hierarchy or something.
Yeah, hierarchy or something. So you got to decide if it's worth playing their hierarchy game or your husband. Sounds like the husband is so ingrained in it, he's probably not going to notice any of it. He's probably not going to go no contact or anything like that. I know that's a whole other discussion of everything.
Yeah.
I also have the opposite advice, which may be just as crazy, but may work. Get a prenup and elope. Get a prenup, elope. It's done. Now it's just, do you want to celebrate us and this new chapter of our lives?
Yeah.
There's got to be some level of hard reset, whether it's eloping, whether it's working, whether it's, I think that's the common thread of all these things that are coming, which is I think there needs to be some level of hard reset that you have to do. You can't expect the fiance, the husband, the son be a part of. When you do any of those things, I feel like it kind of takes care of all the other stuff and means, yes, you do have to in some ways start over, but you know more of what you're getting into and you at least, you know the game you're playing too. At this point, it sounds like they're really trying hard to play chess. And the mother-in-law is the pigeon walking around, crapping on the board and strutting like it's winning.
Yeah.
So you either got to learn to clean it up and take care of the pigeon and ingratiate yourself in the culture, because you're not going to teach it chess. But there's also this saying, don't wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig lights it.
So it sounds like she gets mad when they peace.
Yes. You can't go in wanting to beat them at their own game or something like that. If you are going to work or elope or any of that stuff, it's all got to be from a standpoint of, look, it all has the thing of, this is happening, let's do a hard reset. You have too much in the way of what you think about me rather than actually knowing me. So, because 9 times out of 10, there's a reason this is romantic comedy or rom-com or chick flick or whatever you want to call it, so many plots where it's, what's the secret? Oh, do a girl's trip. And at the end, after they've had it all out and had their really big thing, they're now best friends, you know, and make it in time, just in time for the wedding. But there's a grain of truth to that. There's something, and I don't think the mom's going to give any of that. You got to either, again, clean slate. Hey, it's done. Now we're just having the celebration. And it's up to you if you want to be a part of it.
Here's my thought.
I'd love to hear your thought.
I agree with you where people like that,
kind of want the game. And once you kind of give a little bit, they're going to take as much as they can. And they're going to always have that hierarchy. It's like that quote of like, what is it? I'm going to mess it up. But it's like, give an inch, they take a mile or whatever. It's like, they're going to keep going. So maybe it's because I've read so many of these stories. I feel like you need to, one, I think it needs to be the fiance that puts his foot down. It can't be you because she doesn't like you. And it's been very clear that she doesn't like you. So I think the fiance has to be the one that says, this is what we're doing. I'm not putting up with this smack talk about my fiance. And if you keep doing this, we are going to elope. So if they can threaten not coming, then we're going to threaten to elope. And maybe, again, I've read too many of these stories and I don't know. Again, I haven't had this actual situation, or I have amazing in-laws and parents that were involved in our wedding. So I can't say from personal experience, but from reading so many of these, I'm like, you don't want to play their game, but you want to surpass their game. You want to be like,
that's ultimately where everything I was saying was.
Yeah.
The company is a way to surpass. Like, yes, you're kind of going into the game, but you're surpassing the current game.
Basically. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're on the next level. You're like,
you're getting around that to get directly into
the
family.
Show them you're not an amateur. You're surpassing all their games.
And I do agree with you. No matter which, if you go any of these routes, definitely, I think it does have to be the husband who says, look, this is how it's going to be. Then we're going to elope. And then you can decide if you want to be a part of our wedding, you know, celebrate that after the fact.
I feel like then when they get kind of like, they try it again, they're like, oh, we actually already booked this place. So. Yeah.
Exactly. You know? Well, then that's the other thing too. The next thing, I think you're right, it has to be the fiance saying that, but I think she has to be there too. It has to be the two of you. No more him going by himself.
Yes.
You are a double. Now, final thing too, because again, you have a great situation with your family and your in-laws. Again, I'll get to my full wedding story in a moment, but I always tell people when it comes to like my wife and I, we've been together a decade now. I always say that, I think it was Bo Burnham who talked about this, but like, we are lottery winners. People are coming to for financial advice. We can't just be like, oh, buy Powerball tickets. It clearly works. We've got someone who like came with not a lot of drama. There is like that aspect of it. Yes, of course. But I do think there's an opportunity to have a different perspective on this all, of course, and everything. And sometimes you just know. I think the two of them together, he needs to tell them, but she needs to be there. It can't be another, maybe just 2 to 4 hour conversations about Christmas and everything. That is your life now. And I think talking to the husband or fiance, saying like, hey, this may be how it is for a very long time. If this does not change, what's the game plan? What is, because you can't just expect it's going to be better one day. They need to work with you on that. Anyways, that's my final
advice on that. Good advice.
I got married on Friday the 13th in November of 2020.
Whoa, okay.
So, and on purpose too. This was not a cancellation. This was not a reschedule. So we got engaged. We had been together and living together for a few years. And we had gotten engaged day after Christmas in 2019 in Hawaii. So like we came home after New Year's and we were engaged. And we initially talked about a longer engagement because we were already living together. We wanted to take some time and plan. Then COVID hit. I am an independent sole proprietor, small business owner, independent artist, insurance, all that. So being on her insurance would be the better call. Also, without getting too much into that and my late mother's, we'll just say religious and political affiliations, if I were in the hospital, I would want my wife, Lindsay, to be in charge of making those decisions, not my mom. And my mom is no longer with us, but that's a whole other conversation for another podcast. But at the time she was alive, and I was like, no, I don't. When I told that to Lindsay, she was like, oh, we should do this like soon. Mm-hmm. And we realized, oh my gosh, like there's all these social distance weddings happening. Mm-hmm. And we looked at a few venues and stuff, but turns out if you want to get married on Friday the 13th during a pandemic, you get deals. We got the Grand Geneva for a deal. And we had the dinner at individual tables downstairs. It was less than 20 people. It was us, our parents, my best friend officiated the wedding. So he was able to be there. I had 3 out of 4 grandparents still alive at that point, and she had 1 still alive. So they all got to be there a bit. And I was like, oh, we're getting married Friday the 13th. Ha ha ha. We're tempting fate. Yeah. 3 weeks before the wedding, we got COVID.
Oh, no.
It was right on the cusp, like literally like 5 days before the wedding. was when we were like no longer contagious.
Oh my gosh, you're like counting the days.
We were. And we were just worried like, oh my God, are we going to be able to taste the food? We were still worried about it. But yeah, but like when people say, oh, you got married on Friday the 13th, that's very on brand for you. And I say, yeah, in 2020.
Huh? Like, wait.
Yeah, in November. Oh,
huh? Oh my God.
Got a heck of a deal. Since then, her younger sister got married. And my parents-in-law have said several times, both during the planning, before, during, and after, you two did it the right way. That's all they said. And I was like, all right, good.
All right. Yeah. Love it. Okay. So I know we're kind of running out of time, but I know you wanted to do another little
this. It's not so much mind reading, more so kind of a mystical guided visualization that everyone can play along with. It really accesses the imagination and so forth. And at the end, I'll kind of tell you the hidden meaning behind all of it. It's a way to connect, not even really with me, but with yourself. Now, just a couple other quick things too. Number one, I'm not going to try to guess like anyone's PIN code or anything through this. No one's going to be hypnotized or anything like that. It's just a visualization. So if you want to close your eyes for this, you can, Krista, and okay, with everyone else. But imagine that one day you come across a secret garden, okay? A wall with vines and growth around it, but you find a small wooden door. But to open it, you need the key of virtue. So I'm going to list off some positive virtues and character traits. You don't have to remember all of them. Just remember one that you see in yourself and see in others. Ready? Okay. So here we go. Remember one of these. So we've got strength, tolerance, wit, bravery, youth, sincerity, tenacity, wisdom, balance, sensitivity. Remember one of those? Yeah. Okay. Everyone else, remember one, concentrate on it. And suddenly a beam of light comes down from the heavens. And in this beam is the key to this door. And the head of the key is the first letter of your virtue or character trait that you're thinking of, that you saw in yourself. So imagine you grab that key, feel the warmth of the light shining as you put it in the lock and slowly open the door and enter the secret garden. It's beautiful. The plants, the wildlife, the trees. However, in the center of this garden, there's a special tree, a tree that mystically has many different fruits growing on it. I'll tell you the names of all of the fruits in a moment. Now, one of these names has the letter from your key in its name. Okay. Now, that letter might not be the first letter in the fruit's name. Your letter might be in the middle or all the way at the end of the fruit's name. Okay. So stay alert and remember the fruit that has your letter in the name. Here we go. Apple, peach, strawberry, pineapple, lemon, lime, grape, pear, orange, plum. Remember your fruit? Okay. And imagine you can reach up and pluck it from the tree. Feel it in your hands and take a big bite of that fruit. And imagine its sweetness, its texture, its color, its bright red color. Because if you've listened properly and have been properly guided during this visualization, you should be imagining a strawberry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And people can let us know if they listened in, this should have worked with them. Again, message you on Facebook, leave a comment, message us on Instagram. I'm at Joe Diamond Live on all Instagram and social medias. Let us know if it worked. Yeah. And also share this with a friend too. See if it works on them.
Yeah, that's wild. We'll do like the clip on Instagram and then we'll share it on YouTube as well. So people can comment and we'll tag you so they can, it can be on your page as well. No, that's awesome. That's a wild exercise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. It was so nice meeting you and hearing about your journey.
And yes, hearing your stories and everything on the podcast too have been great as well. So I'm glad we finally were able to connect and make this happen. So yeah.
Yeah. This was great. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Here Comes the Drama. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate, review, and share it with a friend who loves a good story. And make sure you're following me on all socials at Hey Krista Innes for even more stories, skits, and a little extra drama. Until next time, protect your peace, and I'll see you soon. Bye now.